This is Zubin Kenkri. I'm 16 years old. Today is November 9th, 2017. It's the 8th. And I'm speaking with my grandpa, Diva. And we are recording this in Madison, Connecticut. Can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. What do I say?
Just your name and name okay. And age.
My name is Divakar Kenkre. I originally come from Goa, India. I came to this country in 1960, a state of Ohio, and I am now in Connecticut. My grandson, Zubin Kenkre, is going to interview me for whatever he wants to interview me for.
Okay, so can you tell me a little bit about Goa and your childhood?
Okay.
I'll hold it for you. Yeah.
I was born in Goa. It was a Portuguese enclave in 1936. And I stayed in Goa till I was 16 years old, and I graduated from high school at age 16, and then went to, I had to take an entrance exam, and I went to college because I wanted to go to English college. If I had stayed in Goa, it would have been a Portuguese lyceum. I had to go to a lyceum there to get my higher education, but I didn't want to do that. So I went to India, Bombay. And there, I finished my first year. It's a four-year college, right? I finished my first year. Then my second year, I got sick. I got tuberculosis, and I went back to Goa for a whole year, and I missed my second year. But then after I got well, I went back and finished my four-year college with a BS degree, Bachelor of Science. And at that time, my professor, in fact, he told me that I shouldn't go to medical school, he said. He said, you should go to Pune, a very good school, he said. It's an agricultural college, but it's not really an agricultural college in a sense. It teaches you a lot of different subjects, and all the professors there are foreign trained. So he says, it's very difficult to get into that college, he said. But I'll see I can get you there. So he was a professor and head of the botany department. So his associate professor, her father was the principal at Pune Agricultural College, you know, LSS Kumar. And so she said, I will write a letter to my father, and you go and talk to him, see whether you can get into agricultural school, because it's getting late and the admissions are almost closed, you know, that's why. So I go there with Uncle Nana, your uncle, and I saw the principal, and he says, well, you are lucky. He said, there is one vacancy left for that first year of college. And he says, you can start your school year next week. because it was already late, you know. So I thanked him, and then that's where I went to school. And lo and behold, that was the best education I ever got, better than in this country, you know. I finished my 4 years. I did very well there, you know. In fact, my name is there in the college in golden letters, you know. Big, yeah. And after that, I got a scholarship. I didn't even apply for it, from Indian Council of Agriculture Research, that I should, because I was number one, right? So they probably saw my name and they offered me a fellowship, and there you go again. I got to do my master's, you know. And when I got that, everything was closed. Everywhere. So I had to start all over again and get some home minister in Delhi. If my relative, Babu, he wrote a letter to him, and I went and saw him, and he called the principal of one, and they created a position for me to do my master's. And I was doing my master's, and at the same time I applied to come to United States. So, and I told my advisor that I had finished my research, I would write my thesis when I go to United States. And that's what I did. So I got a master's there. And then when I came here, I started doing my, I had an assistantship, and it was measly $200 a month. And I had to pay my tuition and all those things, you know. After they took the taxes and everything was something, I don't know. It wasn't $200, but anyway, it was enough to pay my rent and all that stuff, you know, books and all that. So I did good there too. I did my master's and did my PhD, and I met a hillbilly from Ohio, and I married her. Don't write that. I was just
you met a what?
Huh? I said I met a hillbilly from Ohio.
A hillbilly. Thank you.
No, I met Lois, who was doing her master's in God knows what, and something about pottery. I never thought anybody gets a master's in pottery. Really? You know? I never heard of it. But anyways, that was a part of her art curriculum, I guess. And then we got married. And then we went to Illinois. I had a postdoctoral thing in Illinois. I didn't stay there long, year and a half. And then I said, I am not making enough money there. So I wanted to work in industry, and that's where I started with Colgate. I interviewed there. They called me to visit New Jersey. I went there and they offered me a position there, and that's where I stayed for 30 some years. And I did well. Raised two kids, got them married. From my son, I have three great grandchildren and a very nice sister-in-law, right? That sister-in-law, Jeannie?
Daughter-in-law.
Okay. And my daughter, Zadie, she has two children, also great-grandchildren. And both of them became doctors. And they're raising their family. And I am retired. And I am passing my time. And I picked up a hobby of doing woodworking. And I'm kind of slowed down now. I don't do too much. I will get my grandson to do carpentry soon. Anyways, yeah. I'm done. I'm done, Zubin.
Do you, so what was your career at Colgate like?
My career at Colgate was very good. In fact, I distinctly remember that the first project I got, remember I was telling you about, my first project was the Gillette company had come up with, I had just joined Colgate, okay? And after 6 months, I got this project because Gillette had come up with a hot shave. You know, you take the shaving cream out and put it on your face, and that shaving cream start getting warm.
The heat, self-heating.
Huh?
Self-heating cream?
Self-heating cream. So we had a big business in shaving cream, and that was a threat for our business. So they put me on that project, okay? They didn't expect much. But I surprised them. Anyways, not only they put me on that project, at the same time, they gave that project to Stanford University in California. Is it in California? Stanford, yeah.
Stanford University.
Yeah. They gave that project to professors at Stanford University. Asked them to come up with a system. They gave them $200,000 grant. And this guy from Goa was making like $10,000 or $11,000 a year. You know. So they would come once a month or whatever it is, you know, whenever they came, they would talk to me, blah, 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 you know, and I would talk to them and they would go back. And whatever I talked to them, they would write a nice report and send it to exactly what I told them, as if it was their work, honestly, okay? And then I said, what the hell is going on? These guys are coming here talking. I'm supposed to talk to them. So I tell them what I'm doing, you know, because that's what you're supposed to do. And they go back and write a nice report and send it to us, you know, to the head of the department and everything.
So they were sending your work to Stanford.
To our...
Yeah.
Stanford.
Yeah.
Stanford.
So
to,
within...
To
within.
Oh, okay. Yes. Right.
Yeah. Not even saying that it was my work, you know. And so within a month, I broke that project totally. Came up with a system that was cheaper than Gillette's, much better than Gillette, and patented it. See? So they come back. They haven't done anything. You know, so far. They gave them $200,000, you know, to come up, nothing, zilch. They come back and talk to me. By that time I already applied for invention record and patent, so they couldn't steal that from me, you know. So they come back and I explained to them, I showed them the heat of reaction and all, you know, it's a two sulfur compound, see, that each sulfur can oxidize, you know. So there is a possibility of oxidizing four sides of sulfur. So each oxidation gives 90 kilocalories per mole. That means if you have a chance of getting four of them same time and making it very hot, okay? So you have to use less in the product. So I explained to them, I showed them, and this is very good, blah, 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 you know. And then they stayed there that day, and the next day they come, and we have a meeting in the with a lot of big shots from R&D, you know, vice president, blah 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 blah. And these guys go on the board or slides, whatever it is, you know, and make a presentation about my work. I said, what the fuck? You know? Presentation of my work. And everybody says, great, great. Terrible. But anyway, that was my first project. So they decided that I was worth keeping there, you know. And they promoted me to senior research chemist. That was my first promotion. Usually it takes about 5-6 years for people to get promoted. So I got promoted. Anyways, and then after that, I started working with something else. Then I got promoted to, I didn't want to go into administration, I told them. You know, I said, I like to stay in the lab. So if you're going to promote me.
Within the lab, yeah.
Through different ladder, you know, instead of administrative ladder, the scientific ladder. So they promoted, which is equal in terms of pay and everything, except not too many people work under you. You are your own guy, you know. And you have a couple of people, chemists, working with you. So that was that. Then I started getting promotion, and finally I was promoted to senior associate director of research, you know, which is pretty high position. And I started getting stock options. Before that, I was getting bonuses and stuff that is to go into my children's medical school, you know. So, and stock options and stuff. And that did well. And then my health wasn't doing well, so I decided I was going to retire. You know, they didn't want me to retire, really. So I told them I want to retire. And I retired at age 63, which is the best thing I did, because right after I retired, I had to start getting my heart thing, you know, all those things. And then after a while, we moved to Connecticut because my both kids were here. And grandkids, and there you go. That's all the life story I have. What do you say?
Well, before this interview, you were telling me a little story about your first Thanksgiving. Do you mind telling that again?
My first Thanksgiving, I was at Ohio State, and there were very few foreign students at Ohio State at that time. In fact, total, I thought I had a number, which was like total of United States, of all 50 states, there were not more than 5,000 students from all over the world, including
wow.
England, Germany, France, India, all those places, you know, 5,000.
Yeah.
That was a lot. Think about it. At Ohio State, we had close to maybe 15, 20 people. That's all. With a body of about 30,000 people,
yeah,
at Ohio State student, there were only foreigners, like 20, 30 foreigners. So there weren't that many. And it was mostly a white country, in a sense. They were like, at that time, 9% blacks in this country, and I don't know how many percent Chinese and Hispanic, maybe 2-3. So you would say like less than 15% were minorities in this country, you know, and yeah. remaining were white people.
Yeah.
See, and so they had not seen too many foreigners, you know. And so when Thanksgiving came, first, I don't know how it happened, tell you the truth, but we were contacted and say, this family wants invite you to spend a Thanksgiving dinner with them, okay?
Yeah.
And so there were two foreigners, one from Syria and myself. They picked us up, took to their home. I don't even remember where it was, okay? You know, Columbus, Ohio. But we went there and we had a Thanksgiving dinner with them, family. And then they dropped us to their place where we used to stay. I was staying in the rooming house. And the other guy, I don't even know because I lost contact with him. But before that, I got to tell you, when I came to this country, Zubin, I landed from Bombay. I had to take a, what do you call that? Cruise ship, to go to London, okay? Because
okay.
that was the cheapest way to go. If I had flown from Bombay to London, it would have been quite a bit of money and I didn't have that. So I got on that ship, which was going to Australia, I think. That was the last voyage for that ship. They were gonna scrap it after that. So I got on that ship and I don't know how many days, but I was sick the day I got on that ship. When it started going, you know, I didn't eat for 5 days, you know. But when the ship's first stop, wherever it was in Egypt or someplace, I got out, took a you know, and then went on the shore and then saw the pyramids and stuff. And then came back when the ship left after next day or something. Then it stopped in Italy. You know, I went to the shore and saw that. And then all the, about 4 or 5 places the ship stopped, you know. And we could get down and spend quite a few hours there and see those country, you know.
Yeah.
And I landed in London. I didn't know. You see, the thing was, Zubin, they only allowed $100 to carry with you.
Okay.
Okay, India didn't allow you. They were very strict. What can you do with $100 at that time too, you know? So I was very frugal with my money. So I went to London and I says, my cousin was in London doing, he did his architecture and he worked there for many years and he had a friend there.
Okay.
So he said, my friend will come. It was a woman, you know.
Mm-hmm.
My friend will come and take you to her place and you can stay there. Okay. So at least I had a place to go. She came. But meantime, on the ship, I don't know how many days it took us to go from Bombay to there. I made friends with a guy, you know, he was also a student. He said, why don't you come and stay with me? I'm staying with my uncle. You can come and stay with me too. And we'll go and travel all around England, London. So when that lady came to receive me, I didn't want to go to her place, you know. So I told her, I have a friend and he says I can stay with him. So she was happy that I selected to go with my friend, you know. His name was Parikh, Gujarati.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with him and then I stayed with him and I started going around London, Piccadilly Circle and all those things, you know, and learn how to take the tubes, subways and all that. And I stayed in London for 4 days or 5 days. Okay. And from London, my flight was after 5 days or something. So I took the flight. That was also very cheap flight. Propeller plane, you know, took long time to get to. So I came to New York, landed in New York, and I had a ticket to go to Port Authority. I don't know it was called Port Authority at that time, but anyways, the bus was supposed to pick me up. I mean, stop there at the airport. And but that was not true. So I got my one suitcase, right? And early in the morning, and I go out and talk to this information. And I says, I have this ticket to go to Columbus, Ohio. Where do I catch the bus, you know? So they said, you can't catch the bus here. You have to take the bus from here to Port Authority. And the buses, they told me the ABC, whatever it is, you know, you take the bus A or B or C, I don't remember. And it goes to Port Authority. He said, it doesn't cost you too much. He says, it was like $1 for 50 cents, I forget. From the airport to Port Authority, you know. So, okay. The bus comes around certain time. He says, it's outside and you can catch it. And then all of a sudden, I see these two guys sitting there, you know, crew cut and all that stuff. I looked at them. I said, my God, these guys were my professors. You know, and they're sitting there on the bench there. So I went there and I said, what are you doing here? You know, they said, well, we got to go to Kansas. And we are waiting for somebody to take us to Kansas. You know, this was my professor. And I said, well, I said, nobody is coming here. Kansas, you got to take a flight to go to Kansas, but I don't know where you get that flight, I said, but you come with me, I said, and we will talk to these people here, information. So I took these two guys to the information, you know. So they showed them the ticket. He says, we have a flight at to go to Kansas. So they look at the ticket, he says, you can't take a flight from here. You got to go to LaGuardia. And they were sitting there, you know. So I said, how do they go to LaGuardia? I said, oh, he says, you can take the bus to go to LaGuardia outside. The bus will come and you can hop in that bus and go to LaGuardia. And there you go to that counter, whatever the airline, and catch your flight. You don't have too much time, you know. So they get their bags and go out and catch the bus and go to LaGuardia. They would have missed everything, you know. sitting there thinking that somebody is going to come and take them to Kansas. Anyways, I go to Port Authority. It was early in the morning, before noon, you know, I was there, and my bus wasn't due till about 3 or 4 o'clock in the evening, you know. So I'm just sitting there, and at that time New York was very honest people, you know. So I had a big suitcase, and I had to go to the bathroom. I can't take the suitcase to the bathroom. So I left. Somebody said, I will watch it for you. Go ahead. So and I went to the bathroom and came back. My suitcase was still there. And then I go to the ticket counter. I had I forget how much, something like $25 or whatever it was in my pocket, you know. So I thought my bus ticket was all paid for. I go there to the ticket counter and I showed them the ticket. He says, yeah, you got to pay, I forget how much, $17 more. So what do? I pay $17 more. So my money was totally depleted, you know. So I had lunch at the Port Authority. I was hungry, I had lunch, and then I had very few dollars left in my pocket. That was it, few dollars. And took the bus. The bus stops for dinner, you know. I didn't take the dinner, I was okay. I didn't have money to pay for the dinner. So I ended up in Columbus, Ohio at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I told the taxi driver that I want to go to Ohio State campus. And he says, at the closest I can get and the cheapest motel I can find. So he says, okay. So he took me to the campus and the motel at $10 a night, you know. So I had $2 left in my pocket. So my fare was $1 at that time. So, and I was offering him another dollar as a tip. He says, no, you don't have to give me a tip, you know. Thank God, because I used that dollar next day for breakfast. Double breakfast, you know. I was hungry. So I told the guy that I'm checking out, but I will come back for my suitcase and I'll pay him. Okay, I left my suitcase because I didn't have money to pay him. So I had to walk all the way to across the bridge, you know, the Tangier River, to see my advisor. I saw them, my advisor, and I said to him that I was staying in motel last night and I had to pay him $10 because that's what it is, and I don't have money, so he gave me money advance, you know. And he said, you gotta go to the housing place. I mean, this guy, it's easy for them to talk like that. You gotta go to the housing place and see where you can stay. I said, where is the housing place? He says, you gotta go right across the river and then you can find the housing place. Okay. So I go across the river and kept asking people where the housing is. So they told me. So I go in there and they give me a catalog, you know, not catalog, what do you call that?
Rolodex.
He says, that lady says, you go through it, find out, and then you can call where you want to stay, see whether they have vacancy. So I wanted to stay very close so that I can walk to my, which is like mile and a half, you know, because there is nothing in between. So I find this place, and I tell her, this is the place I would like to stay if I can get there. And so she says, okay, this is the telephone number. He says, you call this number and talk to the lady, she says. I didn't know how to use the telephone. You know?
Yeah.
I didn't know how to use the telephone. So I tell her, I don't know how to use the telephone. So she dialed, you know, and then I talked to the lady, and she gives me a map where to find that place. As if I know everything, you know? So I looked at that map and, you know, I found the place. And old German lady, there were two rooms there, mm-hmm. one mine and one there was another person. So she told me, I can take this top room.
Okay.
I took the top room and I told her I had to go and pay the motel and bring my suitcase. So I walked back to the motel. That damn suitcase was so heavy, Lois. Unbelievable, because it had books in it that I was supposed to write my thesis. That made it heavy, you know. So I lugged it out, stopped several times, and finally came to this place and put my things and collapse on the bed. That was it. Because I had to start next day. Yeah. That was tough. So that's how I did my stay in the United States. Nobody helped. You got to help yourself. What saved me was that trip from Bombay to London. On the way, going to different countries and spending 5 days in London, you know. And that helped me.
Yeah.
Helped me to seek different things, you know, find out how to talk to people and get information and stuff. I've always, when I was in undergraduate, I always liked to travel, you know. I wanted to see different places, and this wasn't so unusual for me, you know. I was the only one in the family who traveled all over India, not them, not rest of my siblings, you know. I used to travel. It was cheap, you know. The fare was cheap. I didn't have to travel in first class. Third class, you know, go from place to place. Anyways, that's what I did. That's how I spent my years in the United States.
So one last question.
Yes.
So knowing that future generations might hear this recording, do you have any advice?
Huh?
Knowing that future generations might hear this recording, do you have any advice for them?
Oh, what advice I can only give in hindsight is that I wasn't treated well in this country when I first came, okay? I didn't even realize it, but that was the fact. And for them, I would say, you got to do what is best for you. That's all.
Yeah.
Don't rely on other people that they will help you. If they help you, they help you. But most of the time, they don't, you know. They have good intentions, maybe. But they didn't help me. You know? I had to help myself, which is good. All my life, that's what I had to do, help myself. Except, I would say, at Colgate, there was a guy who took me under, Carl Shumway. You know, that was the only one, nobody else. So for the future generation, they got to work hard. That's all you got to do. Work hard and don't rely on too many people. If other people want to help you, they will really help you, you know, but most of the time, it doesn't happen. Does it, Lois? Did anybody help you?
Well, I think a lot of people helped me. I don't feel like people didn't help me.
Huh?
I don't feel like people didn't help me.
A lot of people helped you?
I don't feel like people didn't help me. I don't feel that way.
They didn't help you?
They helped me.
Not me. Except I could say that guy in, when I graduated, he got me into.
Who?
My professor, agricultural college, you know, he got me there. And my cousin who got me to, you know.
You had a friend, and your friend in England kept you there for 5 days.
But that's about it. But most of the thing, I got to tell Zuban, you got to do it yourself most of the time, you know? Huh?
That's good to think that you
should. What?
I say that's good to think you should do it yourself. And people help you, that's good.
Yeah.
Okay, that's thank you, Papa.
Huh?
Thank you.
You're
thank
welcome.
You for doing this.
That's what you got to do.